Yes, and you're listening to Take Back Our Radio on www.rmr.fm. Thank you, and I want to thank again Susie there for that beautiful music. And people are actually dancing here at the Imperial
Club. Right.
We're having a fun time. We're heating up the place up in here. So,
speaking of heat, I hear we have some people. To see, you called your mom. Not really called.
I didn't call her.
It was telepathic, right? Because we had some people tuning in from TNT.
I don't think it was her, though. So it's actually
It was your cousin.
You think so? Okay,
yeah.
All right.
But we have a lot of people to thank that made this possible, the Take Back the Radio International Women's Day celebration. Mm-hmm. We have Beverly Lewis, Dr. Beverly Lewis, and also My Market Bakery and Cheese Magic.
Yeah.
Listen, I got to check that out. That's at 182 Baldwin, 184. I have to go there. The bread and the cheese and everything. Oh my gosh, I can't even say more. You fed me, and thank you. You fed all of us that are here. We also have the CAPA, the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, the Association of Part-Time Undergraduate Students, Basic Community Newsletter, Basic Radio, the Canadian Federation of Students, and for their endorsement and support, Eric Mills for his generous donation towards our printing costs, Sue at Boardwalk Chocolates, and let me tell you, those chocolates, did you taste the chocolates?
No, I didn't taste
them. They're very Moorish, and if there's any left, I'm taking them if it's all right with you. You know what I mean? Of course, my partner in crime, but it's a good crime, Ron Nelson, Reggae Mania in
and
the
he
building.
Real hard for the woman.
In the building.
So, Reggae Mania better realize that my boy try his best to do the best for International Women's Week.
And he's
thank
doing
you,
a good job. And this is good for Ron. I'm impressed.
Yeah, me too.
You know what we're talking about. And Christiana Clemens, music director at CKUT, and former CKLNer, Ryerson alumni, and Gretchen King, news director also with CKUT Radio. Leela Chilia, program coordinator at Vancouver Co-op Radio. We've got a lot more to thank, but let's not forget Dale, Sheila, and all the techies that are here Okay, we've got so many more to thank, but we've got to go on to our next show. Do you want to introduce them?
Oh, we are having next, my favorite name of a radio show. Tell you the truth, I love it. Radio Cliteracy is going to be up next. Come on, woman.
Woo! Hi, everyone, and welcome to Radio Cliteracy, broadcasting live across this great nation, and apparently in Venezuela as well, which is
all over. Very exciting. We're all over.
Muchísimas gracias. And we're live here from the Imperial Pub, and as always, we are spreading words like wildfire over the waves.
And you're in for a treat this International Women's Week, not just with the incredible programming, but because the whole Cliterate crew is here to host. Thanks for joining us in the studio, those of you who are here at the Imperial Pub.
That's right, Carmel. We have the lovely Deconstruct. Of course, you're here, Carmel. Sarah the Rash Rayburn. Natalyn Tremblay, who is a ghost from our Radio Cliteracy past, but she is back. The lovely Kim Crosby and myself, Ruby Tuesday. So I think there's been about a break in the time-space continuum because we have so many incredible feminists in the room today.
It's true.
I haven't seen all of you all together, in one room.
I could feel it. The break in the time-space continuum.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm. It feels good to be back, though.
It does feel good to be back. We are, as always, at Radio Cliteracy, going to jump in head first. And we're going to start with an incredible interview done by our very own cliterate, Sarah the Rash Rayburn, with Bianca from ISIS, which is a feminist NGO that is exploring women and the media.
So currently I'm speaking with Bianca Miglioretto. She is the community radio officer with ISIS International, and she's in Manila. Welcome to our broadcast from exile. We're so happy that you could join us today.
Hello to everyone. I'm happy to.
I was wondering if you could start out by just describing the organization. How did it begin?
ISIS started about 35 years ago. We have our 35th anniversary this year in Rome, when a number of feminists decided there needs to be more communication among feminist organizations, especially in the South, because at that time communications were really difficult still. Later on, as ISIS was mostly serving women's organization in the Global South, we decided to move to the South. So three offices were opened in Chile, Santiago de Chile, Upala, Uganda, and Manila, Philippines. So we have three independent sister offices right now of ISIS. And ISIS International in Manila is focusing on communication mainly, on women's access to communication, enabling women to participate in communication, and because we believe through access to communication, women are also empowered.
And what are some of the projects you're currently using to enable that access?
We have our publications, which is the Women in Action, which comes out three times a year, which usually focus on a specific issue. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is the bi-monthly newsletter, We, and our website, which is a very important information tool as well. Then we're having the community radio capacity building and networking program, where we develop training modules for community radio. And we have made a primer on engendered peace journalism, for instance. We have the project mm-hmm. Women Making Airwaves for Peace, which is a training and an exchange meeting and a production meeting of women who are in community radio and conflict situations or post-conflict situations. Or we also want to tackle the issue of disaster management and reconstruction after disaster, and what role can women in community radio play. Mm-hmm. Then we have several researches. One of our research are in lesbian, gay, transsexual, bisexual situations in Asia Pacific, mainly focusing on lesbian and transgender women, of course. Mm-hmm. And then another is on marriage migration. How are women in Asia affected who are migrating for marriage? Because usually all the migration researches focus on labor migration. So ISIS and all the services extended to migrants are usually scaled up to the needs of labor, of workers, but not so much of women who get married to foreigners and migrate to the country of her husband. Those are some of the projects.
And how are you seeing the effects of ISIS being played out with those projects? Like, what are some of the benefits you've seen to the communities?
The community radio, I think what we have seen in the training is that it can empower women in two ways. Mm-hmm. In one is on a personal level, like women in the Philippines whom we trained would get a job in a radio station or would be able to use the communication skills they learned in their work. And two, when they go back to their radio stations, those of women who do work in a community radio station, they have a better position because they know more skills. Mm-hmm. So very often women are marginalized within the radio station, like not given access to technical operation, mm-hmm. no access to leadership positions. So with the new skills they have learned, they can share them and they get more recognition from their co-workers in the community radio station. But at the same time, we have to realize it's not just enough to teach them skills, because very often women come to our trainings, they get new skills, they go back, and they still remain anchors, are not allowed to do any editing work or mm-hmm. to do any technical work, much less access to leadership positions. So we developed together with AMARC, Women's International Network, the mm-hmm. World Association of Community Radio. We developed the gender policy for community radio, which is a document that hopefully would be adopted by community radio stations. And then it would give a lot of tips how to enable women to participate more actively in the community radio stations, how finally to achieve gender equality in the station.
I wish that we had ISIS to deal with our former illegitimate board of directors. We need you guys to come to Canada and maybe do a training here in Toronto. Would have been nice.
I would be ready anytime.
Good, we need you.
You have great women in community radio also in Canada. I only know of Rita Worden or Sophie Turpin, who are both in AMARC Women's International Network. Frida is in Vancouver, Sophie is in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. No, we're very lucky in Canada, definitely have a rich culture, and definitely it's being displayed tonight on this broadcast. Again, we have such amazing collective of people that have come together to put this broadcast from exile. This is Radio Clitoris, and we're speaking with Bianca from ISIS International. She is going to maybe describe for us now the People's Communication for Development initiative that ISIS is engaged with.
This is an international organization based in Manila, but we are working mainly for the Asia-Pacific region, and we are protecting feminist perspectives from the Global South. People's Communication for Development is a three-year research in five different countries: Fiji, Philippines, Thailand, India, and Papua New Guinea. And it's on what are the most effective communication tools to reach out to grassroots women. And in four out of the five countries, except India, it was very clear that radio is the most accessible tools, communication tool for grassroots women, and also the most effective. But still, what on the other hand, intermediary groups who want to reach out to grassroots women are not using radio as much, or radio is not the one they use most, which has many reasons. One is that in many countries there is no legal, it's not legal to set up community radio, there is no legal framework. It's very hard to set up community radios, or the airwaves are not open for civil society radio. Mm-hmm. So that makes it much harder. So if intermediary groups, NGOs that work with grassroots women would want to access radio, they would have to go through very expensive commercial radio station, like it is the case in the Philippines, or they would have to go through the government radio station, like it would be the case in India. Now India is opening up its airwaves to community radio, but it's a very slow process.
So you found in that study that radio is the most accessible and effective communication. So where does it go from there? How are people getting access to radio?
Yeah, that's one of the advocacy works that ISIS is doing, together, of course, with the World Association of Community Radio Stations, AMARC, Asia-Pacific mainly, trying to open up the airwaves in as many countries as possible, lobby for policies that allow community radio. And so far, we have been halfway successful in India, where they opened up the airwaves, but the process to get the license is still very complicated. Bangladesh is about to open up the airwaves. They're about to change their media law. In Indonesia, it's very good. Like, there are more than 600 community radio stations all over the country, but they have to still fight to keep that airwaves open to community radio. Philippines is a bit difficult case because there is no legal framework for community radio. It's mostly commercial and government radio, so it's very hard because, like, small transmitters are not allowed in these countries. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. Another country where it's very difficult is Malaysia, which has a very strict media censorship. Then, of course, Burma is also where it's interesting development is taking place, is in Laos, where the first community radio has started, and the next two are being established with the support of the Laotian government. So we're trying in those countries where there aren't yet community radio, legal community radio stations, we are really trying to advocate it.
Mm-hmm. So the fight for community radio is global, and it's inspiring to hear about the work that ISIS is doing, and we're so grateful that you could be here. We're wondering if you could tell us maybe a little bit more of what you hope to see come of ISIS in the following years, and what your hope for community radio across the globe would be.
Of course, let's tackle the second part of the question first. For community radio, I hope that there will be any community who would like to put up their own radio station can do so. And in all the community radios, I hope that it one day we achieve equal participation of women. Is it in leadership position? Is it in technical or editorial aspects, in all aspects of community radio? And by doing that, I hope that we also will have a huge impact, one, on the media, that the portrayal of women will change in the media. Mm-hmm. From stereotyped discriminatory portrayal to an egalitarian portrayal, in which women are really portrayed as active members of society, as mm-hmm. we are, and contributing a lot. And of course, by changing the media portrayal of women, I hope to change the society. So, in one way of ending discrimination against women.
Mm-hmm.
With ISIS, I'm sure ISIS will always be very strong in this struggle, having a critical eye on media and keeping on criticizing media's failed portrayal of women, and on the other hand, enabling women to access communication and through this empowering women in Asia Pacific. I hope that ISIS will be able to, majority of women worldwide still are excluded from the so-called information society, and we have to bridge this digital divide on one hand, but on the other hand, we also have to work towards that everyone has the same access to information and communication all over the world.
Amen, Bianca. Thank you. Is there anything that you want to say to the broadcasters here in exile or to our devoted public listening in tonight?
I wish those of you who wish to have your own independent grassroots community radio that you are able to pursue that, and that you're able to realize that everyone has access to the airwaves who would like to have some programs to do or who has something to say, in particular women.
Thank you, Bianca Miglioretto, for joining us from Manila. It was a pleasure to have you on air, and I hope that we'll be chatting with you in the future when we are able to establish our feminist broadcasting once again.
And we're back. That was Sarah the Rash Rayburn interviewing Bianca from ISIS International, and what an incredible way to celebrate all things that we love. Radio, feminism, women, and the thing we love the most, the combination of all three.
Yeah, we do.
We really do.
It's so great to be back with all these beautiful women. And I can't believe, Daniela, that you said you weren't into feminism for the beautiful women.
I've changed my mind. I'm into feminism for the beautiful women.
Okay, I knew it. Yeah. We also love Traitor. Women of all kinds. That's women with an E and women with an I and women with a Y. And
those are our favorite kind of women, though. The ones with the Y.
Yeah.
True.
But we also even like women and their friends who identify as men.
We do like men. We also like men, too.
We do like men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and up next we have one of them.
That's me.
Ruby is going to, has interviewed Tuval from the White Ribbon Campaign, and that is
very
up
incredible
next.
Man.
Hi, Tuval.
Hi, Ruby.
Hi.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, and I'm really happy to be a part of International Women's Day, taking back the radio.
Excellent. We're so happy to have you. I'm going to jump right in because obviously time is a constraint for us here with our half an hour show. So I'm going to jump right in, and I want to know if you can tell me a little bit about the White Ribbon Campaign.
Yeah, the White Ribbon Campaign is the world's largest movement of men and boys working to end violence against women and girls. And it started here in Canada, in Toronto, in 1991. And it was very much born out of the emotional aftermath of the Montreal Massacre that happened in Montreal in 1989. And a group of guys got together and just felt very passionate about the issue and passionate about being involved in preventing and ending violence against women and girls. And they didn't really see a place to slot themselves into the work being done already, which was largely being done by amazing pioneers in feminism and anti-violence work. And so they came up with the idea of the White Ribbon Campaign as a really, initially just an awareness campaign, just a simple method of getting guys to commit themselves to anti-violence, both in their actions personally in their interpersonal relationships, but also politically in terms of not being silent about it publicly.
Mm-hmm. So what's been the response from some of these women's groups, as far as having a men's group that's dedicated to anti-violence towards women?
Well, I wasn't really around at the beginning of the White Ribbon Campaign, but from what I understand, there was quite a bit of resistance, and there were some mistakes made at the beginning and things that really learning real lessons for the White Ribbon Campaign and for men in general around this work. And there was just a lot of resistance in the sense that men very easily got a lot of attention about the work that they were doing, and women, a lot of women's organizations and feminists had been fighting for some attention around this issue for a long time and weren't getting it. And because of the social position that men have in our society and the validity that their voices have, there was some frustration and friction around the kind of attention that the men were getting initially, and that's been something that's just we've just had to continue to work on and negotiate and try and build relationships and good relationships with women's organizations and people in the feminist movement. And I think in the last few years there has been a significant shift both locally and globally around the idea of involving men and boys and really understanding that men and boys have to be part of the solution to this, because so much of the violence in our society directed towards everyone and definitely towards women and girls is perpetrated by men. And so in order to prevent it and end it, we need to be engaging men and boys. And so there seems to have been a pretty significant shift in thinking around that.
This topic hasn't been seen as a men's issue, so why do you think this is important for men to get involved?
Yeah, I think like a lot of other areas of social power and oppression and things like that, you know, we often, when we talk about these issues, like if we talk about racism, we often are generally talking about people of color, and we're not. The people with power and the people with access to power often go unanalyzed and unchallenged. And so I think similarly in issues of gender, we really need, when we talk about gender, often that's seen as kind of a code word for women or women's issues. And I think when we allow men and masculinity to go unexamined, we really are not really getting at the root of where power lies and how to dismantle that and how to, you know, make a cultural and social shift. And I think it's really important for men to get involved, because I think gender is part of all of our lives. So, you know, one way of looking at it is that men should care about gender and gender violence, because the majority of it happens to women, and most men care about at least one woman. So they can, you know, you can get invested in the issue from that perspective, wanting less women to experience violence. But I think also there's just a huge consequence and price for men of their own gender and gendered socialization. And I think men also have experienced huge limitations in the kinds of emotions and experiences that they can have in our world. And think about, you know, gender equity and the end of patriarchy and the end of gendered violence. And I also think there's just a huge benefit for guys and for men. So I think if you can't get interested and invested in this issue because you care about women, if you care about yourself and you care about men's lives, it's another great reason to care about gender equity.
Tell me a little bit about some of the successes that the campaign has seen over the years.
One element is just the amount it's spread around Canada, and it's really a Canada-wide campaign happening all over in provinces and territories throughout the country. But it's also now spread around the world and is happening in over 55 countries on pretty much every continent on the planet. And so that in itself is a huge success for us, that this is an idea that resonates cross-culturally throughout the world. Yeah, we've had significant successes in shifting our work from entirely an awareness campaign to also doing educational work. So we develop and distribute educational resources around creating gender equitable classrooms and talking about healthy relationships and violence prevention with young people. And we also facilitate workshops and deliver assemblies and other kinds of talks and discussions with young people directly around.
Someone wanted to start something in one of their communities, how would people get involved, or if they wanted to donate or know more about the White Ribbon Campaign, how would people do that?
The easiest way is to go to our website, whiteribbon.com, and it's pretty easy to just explore the different ways to get involved. Generally, the White Ribbon Campaign has been pretty decentralized, which means that people in any community or any institution, like a university or a school or a hospital, can start their own campaign. They don't need us to come in and do anything. It's really about creating something that's meaningful and relevant to your own community, and just using the symbol and the language of the White Ribbon to help you get things moving and off the ground and try and make it easier.
Well, that's great, Tuval. Thank you very much. We are very short on time today, but I wanted to thank you very much on behalf of the Radio Cliteracy Collective for taking the time once again to do an interview with me.
Thanks a lot, and happy International Women's Day.
That was our very own lovely Ruby Tuesday. doing an interview with Tuval from the White Ribbon Campaign, which we here at Radio Cliteracy love, because anybody who loves women, we love. But, you know, especially those men who are examining themselves, like he said. We have another incredible piece that we want you all to hear, and it is a piece that Natalyn Tremblay and Kim Crosby put together about creative writing and queer black youth. Whoa.
Righteous listeners, my name is Kim Crosby.
And my name is Nathalie Tremblay.
We are from the Toronto-based People Project, queer community activists and program developers working to empower queer youth. Check us out at www.peopleproject.ca. And we are also proud members of Radio Cliteracy. Tonight we will be leading you through this next segment, exploring a selection of creative writings by some inspiring black queer women.
The song we just played is called Joy Bay by Angélique Kidjo and Blake Lay. This song was written for the film Pray the Devil Back to Hell. This film chronicles the remarkable story of the courageous Liberian women who came together to end a bloody civil war and bring peace to their shattered country. Thousands of women, ordinary mothers, grandmothers, aunts and daughters, both Christian and Muslim, came together to pray for peace and then staged a silent protest outside of the presidential palace. Armed only with white t-shirts and the courage of their convictions, they demanded a resolution to the country's civil war. Their actions were a critical element in bringing about an agreement during the stalled peace talks.
We couldn't have thought of a more appropriate way to begin this segment than with talk of a group of women deemed powerless, experiencing severe marginalization, coming together to occupy public space artfully as an act of resistance. As that is exactly what these brave queer women are doing. The work that we will be sharing with you tonight was written by black queer youth who are all part of a group run by Supporting Our Youth, a program of the Sherbourne Health Center. This project was run by Lorelei King, the facilitator and program director of BQY. Picking up where others had left off was what was once a fledgling project transformed into the group The Voices of BQY, a living memory of BQY's history in the making. For black queer youth, not as owned by Soy, but for and by black queer youth in general, starting with Soy, to create and maintain their history. She led the youth in the process of creating a zine. And tonight we will share the stories of queer black women who are using the power of art to challenge an overtly racist homophobic society. Their stories are part of a long history of African and Caribbean women who have used a variety of different mediums as sites of resistance to oppression. Although it is not the responsibility of the oppressed to educate the oppressor, these youth were willing and challenged to make their way through to the center of our hearts and imagination. We applaud their audacity, their fearlessness, and their irreverence. Tonight we pay tribute to these fearless writers and to Lorelei King as they add to the legacy of black and brown young women building bridges across the many lines of oppression they experience, with the hope that they will be heard and that it will make a difference.
Break Bread by Nico Blacks. A recipe of foreign manipulation mixed in a bowl of wealth. Add some homeland stipulation, stir, until the third world melts. Repeat steps 1 to 3 until you've reached a deficit, and proceed to take from those whose lives are less fortunate. Spread lies of inheritance and financial freedom, while our people kill our own on whatever you feed them. And so I believe in life, but in love first. The power of the womb beyond conception and birth. I find irony in how we enter this earth, as most of us cry before appreciating sight first. A recipe of foreign manipulation. Who is right and who is wrong? Splurging on temporary temptations. Who is weak and who is strong? Separating the bitter from the sweet sensations. A recipe of foreign manipulation. No feeling or rhythm in a song till you found someone new to crush on. We meet kissing both sides of the face and walk away feeling calm, not wondering how come. For on another day, long, long ago, we were friends. lovers, perhaps even mother and daughter, slave and slave master with the scars to show. Little do we know what brought your sugar to my bowl. Upon first touch, ripeness seeps in from the fruit of your intentions, hoped and dreamt on for lifetimes to mention. So instead, let us break bread on a recipe of foreign manipulation.
Why Did You Make Me Black, Lord? By Anonymous. Lord, why did you make me black? Why did you make someone the world would hold back? Black is the color of dirty clothes, of grimy hands and feet. Black is the color of darkness, of tired, beaten streets. Why did you give me thick lips, a broad nose, and kinky hair? Why did you create someone who receives the hated stare? Black is the color of the bruised eye when someone gets hurt. Black is the color of darkness. Black is the color of dirt. Why is my bone structure so thick, my hips and cheeks so high? Why are my eyes brown and not the color of the sky? Why do people think I'm useless? How come I feel so used? Why do people see my skin and think I should be abused? Lord, I just don't understand. What is it about my skin? Why is it some people want to hate me and not know the person within? Black is what people are labeled when others want to keep them away. Black is the color of the shadows cast. Black is the end of the day. Lord, you know my own people mistreat me, and you know this just ain't right. They don't like my hair. They don't like my skin, as they say I'm too dark or too light. Lord, don't you think it's time to make a change? Why don't you redo creation and make everyone the same? God's reply. Why did I make you black? Why did I make you black? I made you in the color of coal from which beautiful diamonds are formed. I made you in the color of oil, the black gold which keeps people warm. Your color is the same as the rich, dark soil that grows the food you need. Your color is the same as the black stallion and panther. Oh, what majestic creatures indeed. All colors of the heavenly rainbow can be found throughout every nation. When all these colors are blended, you become my greatest creation. Your hair is the texture of lamb's wool. Such a beautiful creature is he. I am the shepherd who watches them. I will always watch over thee. You are the color of the midnight sky. I put star glitter in your eyes. There's a beautiful smile hidden behind your pain. That's why your cheeks are so high. You are the color of dark clouds from the hurricanes I create in September. I made your lips so full and thick, so when you kiss, they will remember. Your stature is strong, your bone structure thick to withstand the burden of time. The reflection you see in the mirror, that image that looks back, that is mine. So get off of your knees, look in the mirror, and tell me what you see. I didn't make you in the image of darkness. I made you in the image of me.
What I See by Anonymous. Tell me what you see. I say black, they see evil. I say queer, they see strange. I say youth, they see inexperience. Finally, I say woman, they see weak. Wow, what a relief to know that I am seen as an inexperienced, strange, and evil woman, or rather, to identify as all of the above labels. I doubt if you are seen at all. Although I am blind to society's sight, I must say that I see very clearly. And I see that we, black queer youth, women are lost in a world that conjures the act of voicing out their opinions on what we are, who we are. So as the weak woman who is an evil, black, strange, queer, inexperienced youth, I say, stand up and let your voice be heard. Let them see what we see.
Spaces like this are so important because without them, these narratives do not become public. They become eclipsed by those stories with more money, with more privilege, with more to gain than they have to lose.
We need to engage in public discourse on our collective histories. There must be an emphasis on orality and diversity and on remembrance. The presence of strong black queer female revolutionaries and our knowledge of them is something that is important to share because it is our history and it is our responsibility.
In peace and solidarity.
And so stay tuned to the Radio Cliteracy Facebook page. We know that you're all Facebook stalkers out there.
Sometimes, it's true, they are.
Sometimes I stalk Ruby while we're in the same room.
Good.
Yeah, and what I should be doing is checking out the Radio Cliteracy Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll keep you updated. This is our song.
Oh,
that we're going to play.
Lovely.
To welcome Frequency Feminism.
Absolutely. Stay tuned, because even though our radio cliteracy time is done, there is still
so... That's not all. There's still more.
There's still more feminism.
There is.
I know. I don't think you can handle it.
And before we go, since we never really introduced ourselves, we should probably do that.
We did introduce ourselves.
Yeah,
really
did.
Okay. I totally did.
I'm Carmel Wolfson, and I'm signing off. And I hope you all enjoyed our show. And you should go to the Facebook page and listen
and we'll
to
podcast
what we have
it.
To
yeah.
Say.
This is our song. It is
Anime y Son Cubano.
Esta canción va dedicada. Para el pueblo de Regla, Guanabacoa, Matanza, Guantánamo, Santa Clara, La Esperanza, para Cuba y toda la nación afrolatina, también para nuestros primos, los árabes.
Good.
le la la la. I wanna wele 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 wele. I wanna de I wanna de. I wanna go. I wanna go, mama. Yeah, I wanna lo lo. Querida baila la rumba negrita buena, mi wewe le we. A la 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 la. Di di le le.